I am unashamed. What about you?
So we talked about on the podcast prior about the mother of all commode flushes. So,
well, the last time I heard, you were going to get a track hoe.
Well, first you had to get a sapling.
Make a tree. You know, pick a tree like, you know, people go hunt for Christmas trees. I'm looking for a tree to use it as a plunger.
It's good. With the right prong. Remember, it had to have the right prongs.
Well, that's why I got plunger. And you're basically, so what did y'all do?
Well, y'all's problem is your idea of what needed to be done is coming from a couple of yuppie bucks that live in the subdivision. You don't want to take subdivision yuppie type, you know, men with some wealth. You don't want to take their advice when it comes to beaver dam removal and the rotor-rootering of large pipes. The pipe under consideration here is a 48-inch pipe. That's 4 feet. 4 feet, it's a pretty good sized pipe. If you got up in front of that, when you break the beavers pile mud in there, because with the water ebb and flow back during duck season, I just raised my plate up that shuts that water off.
Right.
4 foot plate. I raised it up. I said, because the water was coming in from the river. So right. I didn't want to flood the duck hole too much, and we had too much water. So I opened that plate up where water would just come in, and I said, I'll just leave it open to the spring. Well, the water got 20 feet deep there.
Yeah.
15 well, how did to 20. The beavers put the mud there when it was 20 foot deep? That don't make sense.
Only a beaver would know the answer to that question that Mr. Subdivision come up with. So you're like, the beavers did it.
Mr.
And unbeknowing to me, they piled a huge, I'd say, maybe a ton of earth mixed with logs at the front of that pipe. And up in there for about 5 or 6 feet, it was solid, just debris. Beavers, yeah. That's what they do for a living. They came here. They got flat tails and teeth that gnaw down trees. That's why I've always said salt water didn't make that thing at all. But anyway, they plugged it. I went down there and looked at it.
Well, what happened to the Traco plunger?
Because I said to myself, there's so much work involved. If you have a hand rake, a potato rake, it's just got four claws on it that go down.
That's like how you normally get them out?
Well, yeah.
When they're not bad.
12-inch pipe, you can rake
off. Or you could have done what I said, which is blow it up and start over.
No, you blow up your pipe then.
You get in. They sell pipe.
Good idea, Mr. Subdivision.
Yeah, but when you're talking 48 inches long and about 40 feet long, 48 inch hole, you're like you're talking money now.
This is the selling the bowl of soup for the birthright. You get to watch a spectacular show, which is the admission.
As it turns out, every time there's infrastructure at stake here, which is what we're discussing, I'm the one that put all that in there.
I agree.
I'm not an engineer, but I did work it out to where I'd put water on the hole and water off the hole. But anyway, I walk up there and look at it, and I said, one way to do this quickly without any danger of a man being sucked up into that, once that dirt leaves and the water on the lower side is like 3 feet lower, well, 3 feet of water is a powerful thing.
Yeah.
Because when that thing starts to flow, it is the mother of all commode flushes.
And Dan has been in danger before.
Dan. Right?
But you have a ninja. Isn't he? I've seen this guy crawl on a wall.
I'm not a ninja, but I got the rake, and I went down there, and I got around it, and I began to remove that stuff, the mud. And I worked on it about an hour. So I'm 74 years old, but I'm taking mud out of there until I get a flow. And I noticed little curls in the water, meaning water is leaving. So I said, I have a flow.
Exit the
But it's
building.
Still a lot of mud there. I said, if I wait, the river now on the downside is a foot lower. I said, I'll wait till the river keeps falling on the downside of the pipe to where I have 2 to 3 feet. I said, because that puts more pressure on that dirt, if the lower side, see, you got water level like this. Mm-hmm. got a pipe in the middle. When it's the same level, there is no current. It's
basically,
when the river starts falling, the duck water starts coming out. Yeah. But anyway,
you're
creating
a natural suction.
Yes.
Pressure.
Pressure.
The only problem is you don't want to be on the front side.
Anywhere near the opening of the pipe, because when that water starts to, when it busts loose, it does it in a, you've got about 5 seconds from it's broke, the water's going through the pipe. You got 5 seconds to get out of that front, because you will be like a missile in with the debris. You will be caught up in that, and you'll have a wild ride for 40 feet. You'll live. But it's gonna push you out.
You hope. If you got to make
yourself.
You don't
want to tumble. I told Dan, just hold your arms straight out, pray, and just you'll be like a missile falling in the mud. But I mean,
it's like the old cannon, the shoot the guy out of the cannon.
It's
right?
Like a beaver dam washing machine.
I saw the guy on television that got sucked up into a 2-foot pipe, and he lived, but he went a covert.
So someone else tried what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. He was trying to get it off his yard. Well, that 2-foot pipe, when he broke all that debris, all that stuff in a subdivision, by the way.
See?
He went feet first. So he's feet first going 30 to 40 feet, and the water's blowing him like a missile. But now he was severely scarred up by the time he got to the end
of it. You figure you got 4 feet, you got twice as much room. As long as you make yourself 4 feet
on
the initial blast.
Hold your breath, and when you go out the other end, I'll be down there, we'll throw you a rope. But, so Dan is down there, and I said, Dan, once you hear that thing break, you start seeing that current start, I said, get out of there. So I sent Stone and Dan. I figured, instead of me, I said, well, you boys,
they're expendable.
Before they got down there, I said, boys, y'all are what you call expendable. I said, so do
how
the
did
deal.
How did they take
they
that?
They looked at each other, and then they looked back at me, said, what's that word? I said, expendable. I said, you'll live, but it'll be a tough ride. So he gets down there with a thing. Dan's working on it, and he's going. He said, I got my drag way up in the pipe. I said, do you feel the current building? He said, it's getting more all the time. I said, be careful now, because it's fixed to go. Well, he goes up in there, and no more had I've got that out of my mouth. I heard something, and Dan and Stone were saying, get back. I heard fast talking. Well, one goes out one side and one the other to get back up on the levee. And when that thing broke loose, what I saw coming out of the end of that pipe, it was just logs and mud just turning. Churning like
the Mississippi River.
Oh no, it was like a waterfall on the ground. So anyway, that thing starts, they're up on the bank, we're all looking at it, and they were all like, good night. I said, you don't want to be part of that flow now.
But
so
you know,
now
no,
I have a 48-inch stream of water on a round pipe. Just blowing. So we pulled it off one more time. I had a juke pole ready with a track hole. And it had claws on the little end, the pole.
But you didn't need that.
I didn't like that idea.
Well, I had claws on it, and I notched it with a chainsaw on the big end. So you put the big end over here, and guide your pipe up in there, and get a track hoe and start pulling like that. And it, I as a rooter, hooked to a track hoe, a big long bit of pecan tree, it's about like that.
But you didn't need that. I didn't like that idea.
It was all dangerous, but I mean, you know, that would have been one way, the safest way. The track hole be sitting on top of the
I don't agree with that. Swinging a log around like
that's why you weren't there.
Is that why he didn't get the call?
He didn't get the call,
Mr. Subdivision.
Because you're talking about engineering. There's an engineering
I'm talking
factor.
Safety. So you said that's the safest way.
You know, they said, what you ought to do. I said, how far did you go in school and everything? Well, I graduated from high school. I said, that's not high enough up. You got to be.
See, Dad graduated from Louisiana Tech University, which is a very good engineering school. So I guess there must have been a class back in the 60s.
My major was not engineering, but I ran around enough engineers to get a little input from time to time. The bottom line is, boys, I'm taking care of
a manual.
The water control is working like a charm right now.
You have intellect. You have street smart. You know, then you have Jesus smart, which is the ultimate education. Right.
Well, that covers you in case the whole thing goes south.
So my point is, this reminds me of the time that they sunk the boat. I think we told the story here. And I was the only one who was dry, despite all these great minds of engineering on how to make an ice hole before daylight using boats. My boat was dry, and I was the only one in it. Theirs sunk.
So you just, and your deal is avoidance. I just want to
avoid. We had too many men in the boat. I was turning too short of circles. When the boat sunk, I was the only one who knew how deep the water was. I knew the water would be just below the top of my waders. I said, I'll just
So you rest. Just rode down with the ship,
I was
right?
barking orders, but the boat was sinking. Everybody's trying to size, grabbing all the weapons because we're duck hunting here. It's before daylight. It's dark. And I'm just riding the boat down, and I knew where how deep the water was. It was not over my head. But they didn't know that, so they're floundering.
But Jay was with me. He bailed out because Phil said, y'all help us.
I gave them a bit of good advice.
I said, no.
Stand up. I knew the boat was sinking.
I belayed that order. But the reason I'm telling this is because street smart, I knew it wasn't. Nobody was going to drown. I knew they could stand. They'd figure that part out. So I also knew. And also knew there was nothing I could do. But I'm just saying from a safety issue, I thought somebody has, because it's really cold, you know, somebody's got to be – you know, the survivor to offer help, an attempt.
Or just to report what happened there.
It was not that big a deal. Happened. Stone asked Jay, so, you going to help him because we was all in the water. And Jay said, no. He said, it'll be all right.
No. So look, he jumped and said, are you coming?
The boat goes down. Said, no. Before it goes down, I step out of the boat and my waders. I've got about 3 inches of freeboard.
So you didn't get wet.
So look, and the old mud motor. The motor was – the boat sunk, but the motor was still not quite sunk, about halfway up on it. So I'm holding the boat up a little bit. I said, give me some help, and let's get this boat moved over here on
but
this
But that
log.
Didn't work is what I'm saying.
It's too heavy.
No. The motor went under the water, and
well,
we cleaned it
but it didn't
out.
Go over the air breather, so I knew we didn't have water in the motor. We'd crank it when we get the boat bailed out.
The story's getting
went
foggy
over there.
Through the
we
years.
We bailed it out. Somebody come up with an old plastic deal, and we bailed it out. Got back in the boat and was in the blind. We set our decoys out. Everybody's wet but me and Jay's. I didn't get wet and the boat's sinking, but everybody else got wet.
Well, what?
It was cold. It was ice.
That story's taking a turn. I think everybody was wet but me.
I wasn't there. So
I was damp.
So I only heard the story, but I thought it was funny because and when something happens of big proportion like this in a hunting or whatever, so we got to assess whose fault it was pretty quickly. That's usually what we do in the duck blind. Yeah. We miss a bunch of ducks. We got to figure out who's.
I had too
up.
Many men in the boat, and I was cutting too short. It was taking on well, water.
The,
every
but
time.
The line I heard you first said was, is you looked up at the boys in the front. You said, too many honey buns. Yeah. Too many honey buns.
Yeah, that was
heavy. We got
but
some heavy
point,
hunters.
I was watching the robust men, and they were moving the slowest. And I said, yeah, that honey
my
bun
point
crowd.
Was, when that was
it's
happening.
Not good for a honey bun
I
crowd.
There. I wasn't there.
My
so
point
I
was, when I saw what was happening, I thought, this is a bad idea. And I'm saying, when I heard you talking about cutting a tree and using it as a plunger, I had the same feeling. I
not
thought,
a
this
plunger,
is a bad.
Roto-rooter.
Roto-rooter.
A homemade roto-rooter. No, it worked. It would work.
I'm not saying it wouldn't work. I just don't like the plan. I thought it was too dangerous.
My plan yesterday evening, I told him, I said, listen, if we can get this water flowing through that pipe without getting the track hoe and the log and the roto-rooter, I said, it saves us a lot of time. I said, so I got water coming out of it down there, Dan. I said, go up in there. He's Mr. Muscle Man. He's on the bars. I mean, listen, this dude
I get it.
Solid muscle. You need a man like that. I said, get down there, because I knew he had sustained muscle power. Well, he's with that rake, and I said, we make and do this without having the track hole, red bringing it down, and we rode a route.
I like your compromise.
So
I think it was a good
Dan
idea.
Broke it loose, and the water took off.
And he managed to not be a projectile.
Because I'm not opposed to danger. I mean, the most fun I've had always has an element of danger. I mean, that's what makes it. Fun. So
By the way,
I don't mind that. I just don't like somebody because I don't like an operator swinging a tree around trying to unplug. I'd rather just blow it up.
You're swinging it around.
But you're basing it on the operator. I've seen who you have operating the equipment.
I trust Jimmy Red with my life.
Well, and you did.
And there we agree to disagree. I don't get anywhere near someone
by the way,
who said, I can do that. What school did you go to? The School of Hard Knocks.
Well, you ain't been knocked enough. I'm telling you. I mean, the bottom line was, by the way, when we do something like that, and now I've got a, you say, well, what keeps the beavers from just plugging this up?
Nothing.
Here's what a lot of, oh, yeah.
Well, I've got an idea.
Now, you
that.
Just said it. You heard what he said? He's not, well, not on the, he's not on the
you've
same
been down there.
He just turned
said,
in a Mr. Sunday.
He said, you can't keep them. You can do nothing. Here's what you got to remember about beavers right. and this? Flow of water. Everything is the speed at which the water is flowing. There's a certain speed
that they won't that attempt.
Beavers will not attempt it okay. because what happens is if they go up there at the mouth of that pipe,
then they're going through.
They're going on a wild
ride.
It's too swift. But I've through watching. I don't know what the, I haven't measured it with a, some kind of micrometer or whatever. I haven't measured it. But the speed at which that water is going through that pipe determines whether beaver will stop it up. Right now, they won't even
common.
Attempt it.
I think that's
but when that
sense.
Current slows down and it begins to be half a pipe, got me?
Yeah.
When it gets down to a half,
then they're
or
coming
a
back.
Here they come back because they say now we'll let the current help us, and that'll bring the debris, and we'll start packing. And they'll put one log this way and one this way.
I think we agree
with
that.
They'll get debris, and finally they got mud, and now you got 1,000 pounds of dirt back in there. Velocity of the water, that's a key element of the beavers.
Let's take a quick
break. Don't forget that, Jay.
Let's take a quick break. Zach is on our podcast today, which is awesome. Zach, you have a pretty good head of hair on you. You have any bald spots up here?
I've got some receding.
Ah.
A little receding hairline.
So you got to notice the bottom of the shower.
I don't see hair fall out, but I notice that my hairline keeps kind of crawling back.
Mm-hmm.
Only when I look at old pictures like 3 years ago, I'm like, man.
Make a comparison.
I think it's because you have yuppie tendencies.
3 years is not that long, son.
I know.
I look at my old pictures, year before last. I'm like,
but Phil, no one notices your look. No one notices. Well, you look the same.
You get the headband.
You
all
get
that.
My age, and you just finally ended up, and you don't care.
Maybe instead of putting a headband on like that, I got something for you, Zach. So one of our longtime sponsors on our podcast, we appreciate these guys, is Keeps. And basically what they try to do is allow you to keep your hair. So when you're younger, like you, this might help you now as opposed to waiting to your dad's age, and it may not help you as much. So Keeps basically offers generic versions of a couple of FDA-approved hair loss products. They're the real deal. You go online, you get evaluated by a doctor so you can make sure you're ready for it. It ships right to your house. So basically Keeps helps you save your hair without leaving the couch, which Jace would love that. So if you go right now, you get half off your first order, half off, keeps.com/door, D-O-O-R, keeps.com/door, and keep some of your hair. So that was Beaver 101, Mr. Subdivision.
I obviously agree, but I have a thought that, look, that's common sense. But you've been fighting the beavers for, 30 years down there? So I have an idea that
you... here lately, all Jason's been doing is sitting in front of that computer screen watching the stock market. You don't want his advice about beaver dam removal.
No, I have an idea.
But he's got an idea.
He's got an idea.
He's been thinking of it.
You know, watch the stock market up, too. Well, listen to him. But what are the beavers doing? Don't talk to him.
Since you've challenged my intellect, I have an idea.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
For 30 years, you've been fighting the beavers. And you said, I figured out how they won't redo the dam. Well, get
I've never beat them. I'm winning.
I have the way to beat them.
Winning.
You ready? I have the idea. I haven't told you this. Here's what you do. After the water goes down, and because you've won this little battle,
yep.
But the war, no, because gotcha. It happens every
I've won
year.
All the battles.
Here's what I think you should
I've
do.
I've never figured out how to correctly handle them.
I got it. What I think you should do is once the water goes down, get the track hoe down there.
Yep.
And you dig a graveyard in front of that pipe. And here's my thinking. You dig it as deep as the track hoe will go in all points around that pipe. Because I got to thinking, they can't rebuild it if they got to have their feet. They get their feet
you're
up
correct.
There on the ground
I've
and they
already
start building.
Done that.
Well, it wasn't deep enough.
Well,
go deeper.
What I'm saying is, you say, how long did it take them to get the big hole that you gouged out in front of it? How long did it take them to fill that back in with mud and debris? 3 years. I dug such a hole that it took them 3 years to get it back up there level with the pipe. Then they begin to stop the pipe up. I've already done that. But you say it works for a year or two or three.
Well, let's do it
again. But you get 10 beavers, and they want to dam it up. The Almighty put in their psyche, if it flows, dam it up. I mean, the guy from
the province
of Alberta, he said, Mr. Hobson, if you want to really get in the middle of nowhere, he said, I'm within about an hour and a half of the largest animal-made structure on the planet.
And it can be seen from outer space.
It's a beaver dam a mile and a half long, and out there in the middle, it's 10 or 12 feet high. You can see it from outer space.
Yeah, I know. I saw that.
So when you talk about beavers and their power, it is amazing how much earth beavers can move. I mean,
because in a sense, you're really battling something the Almighty put in there. It's really, how would you ever truly win it? I mean, they're just going to keep coming back.
If you take a varmint that can cut trees down with their teeth, you're like, what?
And move big.
It sounds like a weird sci-fi movie. If you were,
they should have a movie about it. Somebody should have done a killer beaver.
They can't lift logs like humans can with equipment or whatever. So you say, well, how do they do it? They wait till the velocity of the current is at the peak.
And then they just nudge them. Where
they just nudge them. And look, the current is they know the current will carry it down.
So they're tugboat captains on top of everything else.
They're thinking. Listen, I've been at war with these beavers for 30 years.
Well, if we could just get somebody on the inside where we could really know
culture,
what they're thinking.
When them old guys moved westward, when they settled the country, and they said, we're after beavers. Beaver hide, French explorers and trappers.
That was a big thing.
That's what who founded the country. When they went out west, the beavers weren't down here in the southern part. Nope. Right. They stocked them in here. But now, whoever pulled that stunt off should have never done that, because now they are nationwide and they are a bone to be chewed. Ask the highway department in any state, do y'all have any problems with the beavers, and let them get back with you. They've killed millions of acres of timber. They've cost millions of man-made hours to get all around Monroe, West small towns.
Anywhere around here,
I mean, to keep their water flowing out of the city into the river. The river's full of them. I mean, look, they have really – it's a problem.
Well, somebody told us the gators.
But you don't want to kill them all because,
problem.
You know, a beaver, I see them swim by, a lot of them. I don't shoot them. But if they're in there around that pipe, and if I want to get the water out of there – I take a little pot shot from time to time. I said, well, the only thing I know to do, they have traps, you catch them in and all that. But they're a bone to be chewed. I'm trying to live in harmony with them, and I've had several conferences with them to get them to shut it down, but they will not listen.
If we only had an ambassador, a beaver ambassador, somebody we could send in there to the camp that could speak on our behalf and say, look, we'll tell you where you can stop.
You could train them. You can train a dog, you know, if you could just train the beaver.
Alligators and men – are their only predator.
But alligators, that's why I think this
big
influx,
gators will take beaver in just one.
But now we have him. We have an influx of gators.
We do have
of the
gators.
Last flood, so I'm thinking that's a
there's
positive.
Gators there.
So maybe they'll help balance out
I'm hoping they will.
The scheme.
I just don't like getting in a duck blind before daylight. A beaver being there is one thing. A gator is another.
Well, and Dan's down there at the mouth of the pipe, you know, and here comes a 10-foot alligator. And, you know, and you say local man swallowed by large gator, but you don't want that.
No.
No.
I'm saying in jest, he's expendable. I don't want a gator to get him.
No.
Or a ride through a pipe.
Yeah.
He doesn't hunt. He doesn't duck hunt, Dan, doesn't he? He's strictly for labor, you know,
he just
the
likes,
infrastructure of the duck hunt.
He likes doing dangerous things
he
that
does.
You come up with.
Well, because his I don't know if his Twitter or something is Ninja Dan. So he's a self-proclaimed ninja, which means you would have to put yourself through some rigorous challenges from time to time to maintain your ninjahood.
He's the perfect man that came along, and I'm going into my mid-70s, but I was down there yesterday because they did that one. Well, all the pipes – the rest of the pipes that's holding the duck water, we're talking hundreds of acres here.
Right.
So when I get the water flowing, I go up on the middle levee, Jace. I have to get those two unstopped. I go to size levee, that and there, I have to get that one unstopped. Because you get the bottom pipe draining, Al, I've got to roto-rooter all the pipes.
Well, that's why I'm saying I think we need to dig deeper holes, which I don't like it because if you fall off in it, now you're in a – Well, you know, you're back
to dangerous for us.
A famous Bible verse, but I don't know of any other.
I can't get around there in the front of it and work with it as easy when the big hole's there. But I did tell Red 3 years ago. I said, "Dig me a big hole there, so it'll take them a while to build it back in there." They're moving
because they got
to
have their
at
feet.
Each pipe. There's probably a ton, 2,000 pounds of dirt and mud and logs on each one of these pipe openings. Well, you just think about it, a ton of dirt. And you're going to go down there with a rake about that wide with a 5-foot handle on it? I mean, if you're going to do it by hand,
well,
it's just a problem.
As large as our podcast audience is, I'm sure somebody's going to have an idea for it. So I look forward to
let's get on something spiritual.
Let's take
everybody wondering what I'm doing at 74 years old during a pandemic. What do you do? I said, what do I do? I said, the word is Bieber's. Bieber.
Let's take a break and then we'll dive in.
Humans can be difficult. They can be a difficult resource.
Would you agree with that, Dad?
Yeah.
So this is especially true when you're running a business, right? Because businesses are made up of humans who are difficult.
Well, humans can be difficult in any situation.
And unfortunately, in our environment, you got wrongful termination, you got minimum wage requirements, you got labor regulations. I mean, there's a lot more stuff now than even when you first started a business, Dad, back in the 70s. You didn't sit around losing a lot of, you know, hair worried about this kind of stuff.
Not at all.
Right, exactly. So it's changed. And so that's why they have human resources or an HR manager. The problem is, you got to pay somebody quite a bit of money to be that guy or that gal. So there's a company, Bambee, B-A-M-B-E-E, that's been specifically created for small businesses. Basically, you get a dedicated HR manager for basically $99 a month, which is great. You don't have to hire a person, spend benefits and those type things like that. So we want you to check them out. There's month to month, no hidden fees. You cancel anytime. So you can basically make sure your business is HR compliant. So you get a free audit if you go there today. It's bambee.com/Robertson to get that free audit. That's bambee.com/Robertson.
One thought I had was, you know, in the last couple of days, we get a lot of comments. I've had a lot of discussions about John 6 and 7 that we've been talking about. And a guy had a pretty good question. And he read this John 6:39 to me, and it says, you remember that it kind of got weird in John 6 when Jesus said, you know, I am the bread of life. That was in verse 35. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty. And so I think at that time the people standing there were like, do what now? Is this cannibalism? Or, but then he made another interesting comment. Of course, Jesus was trying to portray the heavenly versus the earthly. That was the whole context of what was happening.
Because,
would you agree?
Yes, because he had just fed them the bread and the fish. And basically, they're showing back up for the next meal.
Which you have to have to survive.
You need it. And so they were like, well, we're here for our daily feeding, because now we're building building an army that wants to be fed miraculously every day.
Yep.
And so that was the point. He spun off.
So this discussion I had came from 39 of chapter 6, where it says, and this is the will of him who sent me, that I shall lose none of all that he has given me, but raise them up at the last day. And he was asking about that because a lot of people believe that's a spiritual thing, in that there's only, you know, a few that are saved and none of them will be lost. And so this guy had some really good ideas and points about this.
And we get that question a lot, Jace, from people about.
We do.
Yeah.
We'll
just explain the difference between, because we quoted that Hebrews 5 about those who have by constant use used the scriptures as food. He solid food. So you have spiritual food. Solid food is for the mature, and you start talking about Jesus, the bread of life and all that. You have a spiritual feeding, and you have physical feeding. Both of them are constants, meaning you're not going to live without physical food. Your body will shrivel up and you will die of starvation. Well, then you have spiritual food, and there is a big difference. But a man who has figured out both will understand solid foods for the mature who by constant use have trained themselves to distinguish good from evil. Jesus is saying, you feed on me. Mm. He's saying the qualities that I possess that I'm showing you. I'm the perfect man. Perfect God, perfect man. You need to feed on me. Whatever I do, however I respond,
whatever I say,
put that into practice. You're exhibiting spiritual food, and you'll live forever if you'll feed on me.
Well, I think in this case, he was talking about conquering. You think about what Jesus did. Jesus conquered the world, and he didn't lose a man in a battle. You just think about that. In fact, he actually died, but there was no war. That, you know, when you think about a king or someone taking over.
Which is what
over,
they were driving him to.
Well, right. There, here they are saying, oh, he has special powers. We remember they were going to
make him king by force.
And we'll just take over the world because this guy.
Satan never had his boot on the neck of Jesus because 3 days after he died, whoops, he's standing back up again. You're like, whoa. Right.
But he took over the world in a non physical military way.
Correct.
And so I think this is
excellent
what he meant.
Point.
Because let me just read these couple of verses. The next verse, verse 40, says, for my Father's will is that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. Now, let me just read you another thing. So you get to chapter 7 after all this happens, after the miracle, you know, how are people responding? And it says, after this, Jesus went around in Galilee, verse 1, purposely staying away from Judea because the Jews there were waiting to take his life. So now there's a couple of things there I want to say about this. Number one is if someone has the miraculous, if you've seen or heard of a miracle, I'm not sure why they didn't put two and two together. And what I mean is kind of like Abraham. Remember when he said, you know, sacrifice your son?
Reason to the resurrection.
He reasoned to the resurrection. He's like, well, wait a minute here. This guy or this being has, you know, if I saw a miracle, if you start thinking what the potential is, well, one of the potentials, if you have the power to manipulate atoms and molecules, then that means there's a possibility that you can beat death. Now, their mind didn't go there.
You got to remember, if you're on row 30 outdoors and you're on row 30, it would have had to been some type of, I'm just saying, rows. There's 5,000 men there. Mm-hmm. Here comes the grub.
Yeah.
Well, if you're back there on row 30 and the fish come by and the bread, you're not seeing the source of it. It's just coming out of him.
It's just flowing down.
He's down there on the side of the hill, and all this food's flowing out of him, but you're not putting it together. Where'd this food come from?
That's what I'm saying. I'm sure everybody's
looking hungry,
up there.
You're hungry. You haven't eaten. I mean, here comes the fish and bread. Humans being humans, it's like your kin folks when they come. They start digging in. You're like, whoa, easy now. Let me offer a prayer for this.
Well, right.
Y'all.
And so, but they're threatened.
So row 30 does not realize that the source of the food, this is a miracle. They're not aware of it. I mean, how could you tell? That's my point.
Well, right. But
so
I'm
they
saying,
were somewhat in the dark about the miracle, Jace, is what my point is.
Yeah, could and be. I agree. But they were wanting to kill him. And so he says in verse 6 of chapter 7, Jesus told them, the right time for me has not yet come. And I think this is funny, this next part, because he says, now I think he meant by his death, because he was staying away, you know, not because he was scared. Because obviously he proved that later.
He
wasn't scared to die.
Now, Jesus, look, he had to show them, Jace, the reason the time was not right. He had to show them how to live before he gets to, and this is the way you die and come back from the dead.
Hang on, let's take a break. So one of the things that has affected us a lot, I guess Dad and us, Jace and I, we work for different churches, or same church, but we meet in different places.
And so we haven't been able to gather for months, which has been strange, I would say.
There's been positives.
There has been. Dad has been like sequestered so long. We're getting ready to reopen, which is going to be fun to be able to get to see folks. But there's a new sponsor, and I talked with these guys the other day, and it's called Adjace, A-D-J-A-C-E. It's Adjace. That's how it's pronounced.
Well, I like that.
I figured you would like that. We mentioned that when we talked about it. Basically, what they do is they try to connect people online. They have a system, basically, where you can build directories and people, and there's a lot of planning center software to connect people, and it sounds really great. I loved what they told me about it. It's super easy. You can set your directory up and be running in 2 minutes, which I like that, Jace, because most of the things
you need to get all your people connected online.
Yeah, just go ahead and make your plug for them.
Dad's not. I explained to the guys that Dad wasn't going to be their main pitch man because
I'm
in
a cell phone free zone.
Yeah. Basically, you're going to synchronize your church to Planning Center, which you can use in worship and all other things. In fact, our church is able to do that as well. So we're excited about this. It's secure. No one else can see your information outside your church. You can have a mobile app access, browser access, print, and a printout for Phil, they say here, Dad, so you can read.
Hey.
There you go.
See, it's like when you're connecting like with a fish on a line, this is connecting people on lines.
This will put
on
me
the net.
This will put me in the mainstream.
That's right.
Yeah. You're going mainstream.
And the good thing is it's inexpensive. They understand. It's free for all churches that have less than 50 people. So if you're a small church, it's free. They're going to let you do it for free, which is great. $10 a month for churches between 50 and 250, which is where most churches are. So it's pretty inexpensive. Prices go up as your church gets bigger. You go to Adjace, ADJACE.com. Hit the new church button. You're up and running in 2 minutes. It's a great way to connect your folks. And another thing, Dad, is
you understand my point, Dad?
That's, I agree. That's true. And before you make your point, Jay, there were also things he had to do to fulfill prophecy that hadn't happened yet.
I was going to say that, which is where I'm going with this. But then he made a little joke here. He said, for you, any time is right. It's kind of funny.
Well, it is funny. And think about it, because now, 1 minute you want to make me king, next minute other people up here want to kill me. You talk about mob rule.
But he's like, it's not time for me to die, for you, anytime. However, there was a looming prophecy, and you say, what? Well, if you turn to John 18, when he was arrested, when Jesus was arrested, listen, I think this is really interesting. And my buddy put this on me. I hadn't made this parallel. But it says, here comes Judas. He betrays him. When Jesus said, I am he, this verse 6 of 18, they drew back and fell to the ground. Weird. Again, he asked them, who is it you want? They said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus said, I told you that I am he. If you are looking for me, then let these men go. Well, these are his, disciples, his followers. This happened so that the words he had spoken would be fulfilled, and here in quotes, which is a quote from earlier in John 6:39, I have not lost one of those you gave me, which goes back to that what he said here, that I shall lose none of all that he has given me. So I really think that this situation, now we're going to the deep water here, was in reference to him becoming king through his death and resurrection and not losing any of his followers in a battle. Because when you think about it, he actually lost them all after this, as far as through death, but not really, because his death, burial, and resurrection, then came the outpouring of the Holy Spirit, which then his disciples surrendered to. So then when they had the martyr's death, he didn't lose any of them because they're all indestructible now of what happened with the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus.
Yep.
I really think that's what it's talking about. Not a theology where that eliminates half the or three quarters of the population because he said this phrase.
Yeah.
You see, oh, yeah. I mean, now a lot of people may not even know what that is, right. But I think that's what that specific verse, which we try to stay out of the weeds on this podcast, but I think there's been so many questions on what did he mean
how
by
can we
that?
Know? Because, there's some stuff out there. And also, another thing he had to do, Jace, was he still had to, you know, there were other prophecies. There was the one where he would come in on a donkey or a foal of a donkey and where they would sing Hosanna. I mean, he wanted it to be to remind people that are looking. It was like, oh, yeah, this is how he comes. This is the Messiah. This is him.
Well, what's the number?
They knew Zechariah.
What's the number? There's somebody's documented. How many prophecies did he fulfill?
I can't remember the number, but everyone.
It was hundreds. I know
everyone
that. One after the other.
So you're like, well, why is that a big deal? Because a lot of probably people that are listening don't realize that. You say, what do you mean by fulfilled prophecy? So a prophet would say something, and then hundreds of years, even thousands?
Yeah.
Even thousands.
Here comes this person claiming to be God who fulfilled what was said, and every one of them 100% was fulfilled. Even this little statement in John 6 not losing them. Oh, he got that in two because he didn't lose a man.
And
a lot of people don't understand that because they're like, well, he lost Judas. Well, nobody was lost till after Jesus did what he did, and Judas was by his own.
Which,
you know,
again, to the point of what you said earlier about the doctrines that get built out of this, and we've talked about Judas before, people have a choice, which is what he said in John 6:40, those that look to the Son and believe in him. So you it is a choice you make to be a follower. And therefore, you can't say, well, you don't really have a choice because you were born to either be one or not. It's a bad way to look at this
situation.
Plus,
he's fulfilling these texts. Now, here's just one of many 700 or so years before Jesus showed up. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire.
Since
Isaiah 53. Yep. He was despised and rejected by men. That's what Jace is alluding to right here. Yep. You're like, yep. A man of sorrows, familiar with suffering, like one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. What's amazing, to this day, the same drumbeat. There's a lot of people, when you say the word Jesus, they curl their lips at you, and they sneer, and they just come at you, and, I mean, just rip your reputation to shreds.
Yep. Well, I was going to bring that up. You know,
why would you be mad at Jesus?
Well, my practical application was this. If you read John 7, after he said, the right time for me has not yet come, for you any time is right, the next verse says, the world, this is John 7:7, the world cannot hate you. And you think, well, what did he mean by that? Well, he explains it. It says, but it hates me because I testify that what it does is evil.
Yep.
That's
now,
it.
That's it. You know what I think's interesting about this? Is that really when you read everything Jesus did, he never really had these sermons of what we call hellfire and brimstone. The only one I remember, I think it's in Matthew 15, where he said, out of the heart comes evil thoughts and sexual immorality.
A tree bearing bad fruit.
Well, I thought the Sermon on the Mount.
Well, he had a pretty good barn burner to the Pharisees.
The woe section. Woe to you.
But that's my point. You think, well, how did he testify to what is evil? Well, I think the number one thing he did was that he didn't do any evil. So he represented righteousness, which by nature, because we know he had no sin.
But Jace, on the hellfire and brimstone point you made, you're a little bit shaky on that one.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Because the little statement, unless you repent, you will perish. Well, don't worry about him who can destroy the body, but the one who can destroy both body and soul in the fires of hell. There was a little hellfire.
I'm saying there's way more positive. What did he do with the Samaritan woman? What did he do? Where he got upset with the testifying to evil was usually against religious people. Yeah.
He did say, my yoke's easy and my burden, you know, you put a yoke on a couple of mules, you're going to plow a field, and my burden is light. Yeah. He did say, look, this is attainable and it's achievable to walk like I walked. But unless you give him time to show you how he walked through these texts we're reading, how would you know exactly who he was?
What was amazing, it
took some time to say, this is the perfect man. Here's the way you ought to roll.
And it was only 3 years to do it. So let's take one last break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
Think about what's happened in America, and it didn't take it, but because I saw it coming and didn't realize it. From the 60s to now. So we've had about a 60 years, give or take a few, 50 to 60 years, to run this Jesus, run him out of our school system. If you don't educate little children and you don't tell them about Jesus, how would they ever know what the perfect man ought to look like? And you know what? If you don't have some kind of semblance of training and discipline and, you see what I'm saying? Well, teaching.
Like Jay says, even the rebuking, just correcting. The virtues of Jesus, just what who he was. If you talk about
that's
love,
Jason's point, because yeah. If you don't take the time, what all the prophets said, and he's showing you how you are to be. Well, if that's missing and void, I watched it took 60 years, but you say, I've seen it now, speed up, looking bad now. But Jesus didn't stay but 33. So you're like, 33 years, that's a short period of time to show you how you ought to behave.
You know what's crazy? It was only 3 years.
Think about what we've said, though. He conquered the world without a fight. There wasn't a war. He actually conquered the world in death.
There was a war, but a spiritual one.
Right. Well, I mean, just he didn't lose a man. He basically... I don't think in the history of the world there's ever been a war where you won and you didn't lose one person. And,
you're probably right.
I mean,
by the way, the ongoing war, our cultural war now, you said, I've been saying it here one after the other. Whether people are listening, I think they are based on their cards, their letters, and all this.
No, they're listening.
But I'm just saying, it looks like to me, in this time, our current situation, Jace, what in the world would be wrong with people seriously contemplating, why don't we just be like Jesus? There wouldn't be warfare, hatred between us. There would be forgiveness, and there'd be love, and there'd be patience.
Because I think
you would think people would say,
I think Jesus is the most loved being in the world, but he's also the most hated. And he just said it. He's like, you think you're hated? No, you don't know what hate is. Come fill my shoes. So I think in there is the problem. You have people who love him with all their heart. You have people who hate it because now he gave you the reason, because their deeds are evil. He exposes that. You know, if you turn back and read in John 3, he says the same thing when he said, this is the verdict, 19. This is right after he said, for God so loved the world. Gave his only son, you know, that everybody knows.
The world, that's everybody.
Everybody. He loves the world.
You know, everybody.
I told you, I got into an argument one time that with a fella who said that Jesus didn't die for everybody. And I was like, here's the problem I have with that. Let me just interrupt you. God is not like us. We decide to love. We decide to hate. God always loves. He is love. It's not that way. I know that's hard to wrap your head around. That's why it says, doesn't say God decided to love. It said God is love.
Yeah.
He just is. So three verses later, he said, this is the verdict. I mean, it immediately takes you to a courtroom and you say, what about it? Here's the judge saying, this is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil.
I see it every day.
So that's what Jesus was saying. The reason they hate me is because I expose the evil. And I don't have to really give a sermon about, now he did on occasion, but I'm saying it was more him representing goodness and righteousness and treating people fairly, no matter what they did or their past. You remember what was the evil in the next chapter will be in John 8. The evil is that they were fixed to kill a woman and justified in the name of religion.
That's right. And really just would sacrifice her to trap Jesus.
That at one time.
Right. Well, let me finish reading the verse, right, and then ahead. You come back. Everyone who does evil, because this is the phrase he used. This is verse 20. Hates the light. That's why he said they hate me. And will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. And on the other side, here we are. Whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what he has been done through God. All right, go, because we only have a minute.
Love for God and love for your neighbor, Al, it comes hard. Yep. It's hard. At one time, we too were foolish, disobedient. The book of John, we've been reading about these people, deceived and enslaved by all kinds of passions and pleasures. We lived in malice and envy, being hated and hating one another. You're like, things have changed a bit. But, and this is what we're discussing, and here's a good thought for today. Titus 3, by the way. But when the kindness and love of God our Savior appeared, God in flesh, standing on the earth, the book of John we're studying, he saved us. Watch this. Not because righteous things we had done, but because of his mercy. He saved us through the washing of rebirth and renewal by the Holy Spirit. When the kindness and love of God our Savior appeared. And going back to Jason's point, he knew how to love. He said, you got evil deeds, all of you. I love you so much. I love you so much. I'm going to remove your sin and raise you from the dead. All you have to do is try me. It'll work. And you look at our culture today, Al, I'm sorry to say we forgot Jesus.
Yeah.
We forgot him.
And you know, the Bible says when the time had fully come, so he came at the time when Israel was under Roman rule to give himself to die a terrible death, that my theory is to show us just how bad evil is. And that was part of that Isaiah passage. So,
man,
well, it's good stuff to chew on. So, hope this will encourage you and to keep digging in the scriptures. We do appreciate all your notes and questions. I've got some really good ones for future podcasts that are coming in. And this is what we love to do. So we're so glad you guys were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or Facebook, and be sure and rate us on iTunes so that other people can know about the podcast.